This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is Deja. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour today, we'll be talking with Michael Reyes. He's from Chicago. He is a Chicano-Mexican poet and youth organizer. And in his work, he tries to put together hip-hop with the power of the spoken word in a way that addresses the lives of Latinos in Chicago. He's co-founder of two spaces for youth in Chicago, one of them for young Puerto Rican people and the other for Mexican Chicanos. He's worked as a youth organizer now for more than 10 years. His work combining creative arts with community activism has led to many speaking engagements and poetry readings all over the place in universities and high schools. He is a lead organizer of the Participatory Democracy Project in Humboldt Park. He's been poet in residence with the Chicago Poetry Center. That's a program that's placed him throughout the Chicago Public School District as a poetry teacher. He was featured in the independent film Urban Poet, a Latino-produced, directed, and written film. He has performed throughout the country, and his work has been published in many places. He's here visiting the campus. His visit is sponsored by the folks at La Casa. And he's been here now for a couple days, but there will be two more opportunities for people here in and around Champaign-Urbana to meet him and hear him. There'll be a performance tonight at PAR, 7:30 on the campus, and then a lunchtime event at La Casa at noon tomorrow. So people who were on the campus should feel welcome to stop by either of those times. And here as we talk, questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
I guess that, you know, the idea of a poet doing social commentary, that's not really new.
Right.
But I guess there are some people who might have some doubts about whether hip-hop is something that has something constructive to say, can be a medium for doing that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when we look at things like hip-hop, because it's constantly in the limelight, right, as this destructive force. And granted, within those type of that type of music, there is sexist, homophobic, misogynistic themes that run through it. But those things didn't come from hip hop, in a sense, or those things didn't come strictly from those artists. What happens often, though, is that those young Black and Latino artists are kind of put on the screen, in a sense, and then you can look at any television show and listen to some of the talk shows, and a lot of those artists get blamed for that. And one of the interesting things is that I find is that if you looked on, let's say, rock and roll, or if you looked in rock in the 80s and in the 90s, a lot of those same themes ran through those genres of music. What happens, though, is that the voices that speak against that or speak kind of in an alternative language a lot of times are drowned out by kind of the more consumeristic and kind of the more, I guess, kind of the more of the art that looks more like our everyday reality, in a sense. So when we see, let's say, people wearing chains and we see kind of these women in the videos, it's feeding a certain dream that's created. But the artist that talks about social change often, a lot of times it's left out, and you don't see music videos by certain artists. And you can name a bunch of different artists that are doing really good work and positive work, and they're doing things that are tied to communities. And it's interesting just to see what actually gets played. And a lot of times these young Black Latino artists are kind of the poster children of deviance, in a sense, and not really looked at as the labels that put them out are often a lot of times majority white folk that put them out. And you see the kind of Black and Latino faces almost as like these minstrel characters that are out front. And so hip hop and poetry for us is this other space. And we don't support that kind of stuff. You know, we don't support, I guess, and I say we, our organization, there's Bate Urbano and some of the other young groups in the city. There's a lot of really good groups in Chicago and throughout the country that are really trying to provide an alternative for young people that doesn't necessarily have to be, that your life doesn't necessarily have to be defined by wealth or by money, but really by the quality of life, in a sense. You know, that you're taking care of yourself mentally, taking care of your health physically, you're providing for your community, you're looking kind of for that level of education that will allow you to make a decent living. And it's not about the individual, in a sense. So what happens for us is that we use poetry and hip hop almost like our newspapers, in a sense, to pass information, to exchange information, and to really kind of create this other space that often is denied us, in a sense, because of kind of the limitations of what's really accessible. And so, particularly with the internet, which is really interesting, you have a whole wave of artists and poets and activists that can really put out information very quickly and put it on the internet for people to listen to and exchange ideas. And I think that's a really good thing, because too often I think there's this negative idea of hip hop and a negative idea of, even in a sense, kind of this like urban culture that it's called, but really kind of like Black and Latino culture that comes out, these cultural expressions that don't really have a validation. And so for us, poetry, hip hop, and those kinds of expressions kind of become a form of resistance and become a space where we can transfer information and document our own stories. And one of the things that's interesting for me about that is that one of the things I've been talking about with a lot of the students, and it's interesting, is that we become kind of opinion makers, in a sense. And we look at the press, and the press is the press, whether it's print, whether it's radio, whether it's television, or even now internet. People that are putting things out are opinion makers, right? And we kind of are able to somehow influence our society, in a sense, to look at things maybe differently or look at things the same or find this commonality. And for us, those spaces are really ways that we can also become opinion makers. You know, it doesn't take much really for us to read poems to each other. You know, mm-hmm. You don't need a studio necessarily, even though there's artists that record their own albums. But you can write your own thoughts and you can share them on an open mic and you can share them with each other. But beyond just that, as an artist, there's an activist side, and it's really tied to concrete work and community work. And I work and live in a community called Humble Park, and that community is experiencing gentrification very rapidly. And so there's a whole other level beyond just the poetry and actual day-to-day community work, from economic development, for affordable housing policies, for community organizing, for grassroots organizing. And so there's like a whole level and a holistic view on how to combat gentrification. But you see the poets kind of putting that information that's out there into order and presenting it to the public. And there's like a really good saying, right? We're given all of this information in chaos. And so poets kind of organize that information, yeah. And artists organize that information in a way so that you can kind of digest it and enjoy it and listen to it and maybe understand it a little better.
Can you think back to some particular time in your life where poetry made such an impression on you that you said, well, I want to do that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been doing activism actually longer than I've been writing poetry. And I was doing organizing when I was in middle school, when I was like 14, 15 years old. And I can think of the time then that one of the other things that I make a real good point about is that you have some people that kind of come into this kind of work and come into this kind of artistic expression saying, oh, I kind of did it on my own. One of the things for me is that I was always very privileged to have really good mentors, from my mother and father on to counselors and teachers in school. And I was always tied into kind of the activist part. And it started out like with this cultural stuff and looking at, like, the first thing I remember organizing at school was a Cinco de Mayo kind of event in my middle school, because they didn't have one. But as I was doing that, I noticed that I wanted to have something else to reach people with. And I had always kind of wrote a little bit and would write rhymes and a little bit and dabble with poetry. But it wasn't until I was about 19 that I had seen that there was kind of this other space to be able to address people. And I got to see a lot of hip hop artists, and I got to see a lot of spoken word artists, and was very interested in seeing kind of how you could use that medium in a way to impact people about ideas. And so, like, I put out an album called My Voice, and that first album actually was just stuff that I put together from like what I was feeling. And now I'm at a point as an artist that I can look at a particular issue or look at something that's important to me and formulate a poem and formulate something that I think is informative or document. I think it's really important for us to document our experiences. So it really was that transition of these artists when I was around 19 years old to see like how they impacted groups of people. And I felt there was a void, just like a whole group of us can still consistently feel that there's a void somewhat. And so we feel kind of that area, and a lot of people do poems that are funny, and there's a really good space for that. A lot of people do poems about love, and there's a really good space for that, and people should do that. But we want to fill that space that necessarily isn't being filled often. And so though you have a wide range of kind of poets, we want to fill the space that represents our communities and represents our struggles in a sense. And so I think from that transition, there's a whole group of young people, you know, some as young as 16, that are really working kind of in that space to figure out how we transmit our stories and have them told from our perspective for once.
Yeah. Our guest this morning, Michael Reyes, again, he's a youth organizer, community activist, poet, works in hip-hop, has been doing this for quite a while, was involved in starting two spaces for young people in Chicago, and we can talk a little bit more about those in the next few minutes here. He's worked as a youth organizer for more than 10 years. He is lead organizer of the Participatory Democracy Project in Humboldt Park. That's where he lives in Chicago. He's been poet in residence with the Chicago Poetry Center, has performed throughout the country as a featured reader. He's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois, spending some time talking with students. And to hear questions, welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You want to talk a little bit about Bate Urbano and Zocalo Urbano?
Yeah. I'm more engaged at this point with Bate Urbano, but I still stay really in contact with the young people from Zocalo. Both of them are really good organizations. But so I can speak more clearly around Bate, but I could also talk about the Zocalo a little bit, just because I was one of many of the people that helped start that organization as well. But Bate Urbano is a youth center located in Humboldt Park, which is the Puerto Rican community of Chicago. And the actual word Bate is an Arawak word, which were the indigenous peoples of Puerto Rico and that area in the Caribbean. And so that word actually translates into kind of like a sacred space, for lack of a better word, or kind of a space where a ceremonial space. So what would happen is that in those groups, that would be the meeting center where people would do all of their public life and all of their interactions and social interactions. So later on in Puerto Rico, that translates more into the front space of your home, the Bate. And so we were opening a youth center in 2001, and we wanted to make a decision, and we were working with the Juan Antonio Corregir Puerto Rican Cultural Center. And what we wanted to do was create a youth center in our neighborhood that would be able to provide a space for performance, for creative writing, and we really wanted to focus on days of expression. So we opened in 2001 with that intention. And so the name was really kind of like a discussion between young people. And some people like Bate, but we wanted something else that represented something younger. And so we added the Urbano, which is basically urban. So it's kind of like the urban Bate in a sense. Mm-hmm. And that becomes our sacred space. So in that space, we have an online radio station. We have theater projects that take place. We have an after school program that operates 4 days a week that provides students with different training, particularly in Pro Tools and video and sound editing and all these different kind of creative programs. But we also have another wing, which is our cultural expressions, our nights of expression. So on Fridays, we have hip hop nights. And we've had artists like Immortal Technique. We've had hip hop artists like Crazy Legs. And then we've also had, we also have poetry nights and cultural nights, which range from cultural forms of expression, like traditional folkloric performances, as well as theater, as well as comedy, and as well as poetry. And we've had some of the best New Yorican poets that are known, Miguel Algarin, Willy Perdomo. So we've had a really good kind of resume. But the interesting thing about Bate is that it is run by a group of young people. And so a collective of around 7 people actually run the space. And it's really interesting that those decisions are all made by those people. We are a project of the Puerto Rican Cultural Center in collaboration with the Near Northwest Neighborhood Network. And both of those organizations have executive directors. But really, the direction of the space is determined by the youth that run those centers. And it's really interesting how that dynamic takes place. And they take care of the whole space. So the group of us run completely everything from the rent to the programming, to what's going to be housed in the center. And then the other interesting aspect is that there's a policy of no racist, sexist, homophobic acts or language. And it's not kind of to censor people, the idea that these are discussion points about racism, sexism, and homophobia. And our idea is that groups that, and the way we define kind of our space as a colonized group in a sense, is that those things also exist in our community, in the Puerto Rican community, the Mexican community, and we feel that we also have to fight those things in our own communities. And so that discussion point really allows for us to enter in a dialogue. It doesn't mean that if you go to a hip-hop night in the Bate that you wouldn't hear kind of some of the normal stuff that you would hear in hip-hop, but what you do hear is this kind of other side, because a lot of the artists that we do invite tend to be artists that are looking at the world with a new vision and trying to understand some of this oppression that we face. And so it's really interesting what happens. I mean, we had things from women hip hop nights where it's all women performers, and that's really interesting to see because not a lot of spaces have that. We have some of the, I guess what you would call progressive, but some of the more radical artists in the city or in the country have come through and shared, and they all do this for free. You know, all the artists do this for free. Moda Technique did it for free. Hassan Salam did it for free. So all these well-known artists that are underground artists come out and perform for free. So it's really interesting to see kind of that space. And then a few years later, Centro Sin Fronteras, which is mainly a Mexican organization that deals a lot with undocumented peoples, wanted to look at forming a youth center. And so a group of the Mexican students and Chicana students that were working with the Bate and working on kind of on their own, in a sense, doing their own kind of projects, formed another group, in a sense. And that group has its own identity and has its own kind of structure and it runs similar in the sense that it's a collective of young people. Yeah. But it has its own identity and it focuses on the issues that are important to the Mexican, Chicana, Chicano experience in the city. And that space also has its own dynamics, which is really interesting because you have another group of young people kind of forming their own identities and kind of expressing themselves in a way that's creative, but also very tied to community organizing and organizing around issues that are important to them.
Yeah. And what ages are we talking about here?
Well, normally for each space, there's a kind of a general cutoff in the age. What you're looking at is somebody, like for me, I'm one of the older youth, so to speak, not really a youth anymore, right? But the idea is that I would phase out and that the younger people would take over. Our youngest collective member right now is 16. I would be the oldest at 27, but in between there, the next oldest is really, I think, 24. So I'm trying to finish you know, in March, hopefully, if the transition is correct, because it's an experiment, we don't really have a set guideline. But the idea is that it's youth run. And once you start feeling that the space is no longer youth run, it could kind of turn into a traditional kind of youth program where you have adults running the programs. And so we don't want to do that. And so the idea for us is that people transition and that it's fluid. But the good thing is that we have a really good group of young people that are in kind of their, like maybe 16, 17-year-olds and a few that are in their 20s, 21, 22, 23. So that's really interesting to see that group of people. And I can already give a few examples of changes in the space. I mean, when we were open, we would have never thought of having like a skateboard night. Mm. And some of our youth were like, we want to do that. And so we did that. But that's something that generationally for me, I'm not really connected to, but they're really, really invested in it. And so we did that, you know, the same thing with kind of graffiti. The group that I was with when we started was more into the MC aspect and more into the performance and kind of that aspect of it. But a lot of our young people really like graffiti art. And so they were like, let's do graffiti nights. And so then we moved in that direction. And it's interesting to see kind of those young people adding the dynamics. And so we really try to facilitate that aspect of it, is that people have the opportunity to do that.
Well, do you now hear, this is an old guy question, but I mean, do you as somebody now in your late 20s sometimes look at the younger guys, you know, guys who are 16, 17 years old, and do you find yourself saying to yourself, man, these kids, I just don't get them.
No,
I don't know where they're coming from.
You know, the thing is that I think every generation has kind of that experience, right? They look down. And I actually have a few poems that deal with kind of that idea of the good old days and how we used to be and this nostalgia and even about music, right? People always want to say this thing about music used to be much better. I mean, in a sense, I'm sure there was some quality, but there was really like only one Marvin Gaye and there was a lot of people copying him. You know what I'm saying? And we don't remember those people because those aren't the songs that we listen to. In a sense, you still have really good quality kind of artists. And in the same way, these young people that I can't really look at them in that sense because they have their own space and their own definition. And we're really from two different space and time in a sense. Like our experiences are very different. And so it would be very hard for me to really try to look at them and judge them and try to understand where they're coming from in that level. But we can connect in other ways. And I think that's the most important thing, is to figure out how, as generations, we connect. Because in the community that I work in, it's an intergenerational kind of experiment. The community organizing is done on many levels. You have a lot of people that are in their mid-20s that are in the leadership. I can give you a few examples. The editor of our community newspaper, La Voz de Paso Boricua, actually is like 28, and he used to be a part of the Bate. The director of alternative high school was a part of the Bate, and he's like 25. A lot of the coordinators for our different projects are all like 24, 25, 23. And so it's interesting to see us kind of interact with what we would consider our elders, who are in their 50s or maybe like 45 and have been around a little longer. And then there's another generation that's like in their 30s. And then we have the younger generation that's like 16, 17. I mean, our youngest youth in our space is like 11. So you can imagine kind of the interaction that takes place between like these almost buffer zones. Like we communicate with the kids that are like 16. Those kids communicate with the kids that are like 11. But we're all always exchanging ideas, and that can go from the people that are elders that are in their 50s all the way down. And it's really an interesting experiment. I think that if we really look at young people, there's a false kind of idea, I think, about young people. One of the things, I had a question actually during one of my talks on campus, and it was actually a young person, and they asked me, you know, like, how do we get, you know, young people engaged, because they don't seem like they want to care about anything. And I think that's kind of a false idea of what young people really are interested in. If we look at it, a lot of people and a lot of adults become cynical to a process of change or even hope or inspiration, and they kind of get stuck in this is just the way it is, and they go that way. But young people tend actually to really want to be engaged in something with meaning. And often what I find is that if you are able to engage a young person, they're more than willing to want to participate in something. They're more than willing to want to see something change in their neighborhood. And I can give you an example that most of our young people in our space are really like in their teens, and they're really active in keeping our youth center open. And so there's an expectation on young people that somehow this generation doesn't really care about anything, or this generation has it too easy. And in a sense, you know, this is a generation that dealt with something like, let's say, September 11th. They're in a whole nother world now. And not only September 11th, but the reaction to that, right, by the United States government. And so they're dealing with this whole new world that no one's really had to deal with. No generation really had to deal with in the same way. And it's interesting to see what happens when you actually engage young people. I can give you an example just this past summer with the marches that took place around immigration. We've seen a lot of young people come out and walk out of their schools, and people are like, they're going to walk out of school, and, you know, what they're probably going to end up doing is they're going to go home, and they're going to, you know. And sure enough, you had a lot of young people come out and go and participate in the marches. And there was huge amounts of young people all over those marches and all over the city. And you can see all over the country right now that there's young people engaged in different types of experiments to change their communities for positive change and for better change, whether you're dealing with gangs or drugs or alcohol or whether you're dealing with sexual abuse. There's young people that are leading those areas. And it's really interesting to see. So I think that expectation that young people really, you know, we don't understand them. In some senses, we don't understand certain aspects of them because we can't. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we discredit kind of what they're doing. And so it's really interesting to see that interaction between the generations and the way that people work.
But midway through here, this part of Focus 580, Michael Reyes is our guest. He is a Chicano-Mexican poet and youth organizer from Chicago. He's one of the founders of these two spaces for youth that he's talked about, particularly Bate Urbano for Puerto Rican and Latino kids and the Zocalo Urbano that is for Mexican, Chicano, Latinos. He's worked as a youth organizer for more than 10 years doing this thing, trying to get creative arts together with community activism. He's been a lead organizer of the Participatory Democracy Project in Humboldt Park. That's where he lives in Chicago. He's been a poet in residence with the Chicago Poetry Center, has performed throughout the country as a featured reader. He's here visiting the campus. The folks at La Casa are sponsoring his visit here. He's been here for a couple days, and there will be two more events for people who are on the campus if you're interested in meeting him and hearing from him. He'll be giving a performance at PAR tonight, 7:30, and then at a lunchtime event at La Casa tomorrow. That's noon on Thursday. So if you're interested, you can stop by. Questions, welcome to 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222. My co-sponsor is La Casa. He's actually sponsored by the Intersections Living Learning Community. Okay, I want to get all this straight. Give everybody their due here. You're talking earlier about the fact, one of the things that with the Bate that you try to do is say, look, we have a certain kind of values we want to bring to this place, and that is among those things. We're saying no racism, no sexism, no homophobia. So what happens when you have somebody who does that? You know, say you have somebody who comes to an open mic kind of opportunity and is putting out those values that are counter to yours, and that you're saying, no, that's not what we're trying to do here. So in what kind of way do you talk about that, and do you say, no, we don't want to do that? And maybe then you go on to say, well, here's why, or, you know, how do you talk about it?
I think it's posing the questions, right? And the idea for us is not to police people. Our idea also is not to reprimand people for using that kind of language or those type of acts. I think one is that normally when we have artists come up, we kind of prep what we mean by kind of the sexist, homophobic, racist acts. And so that's always really explained. The idea for us is if somebody, let's say, does overstep that boundary that we have collectively in the space, that it's really that we don't cut their mic off and pull them off the stage. It really, for us, normally what would happen is afterwards, it's more of like a discussion to say, well, you know, this is what we meant by that. And then, you know, in this piece, you know, you did that or whatever may happen. And for us, it's more so of a dialogue. And it's really more addressed also as why that stuff would be problematic. Now, we rarely ever have any artist or any young person that will break it purposely and to do it maliciously. It's one thing to have a song and not really understand what we mean, and it's another thing to have a song and want to really just kind of want to really push that boundary on purpose and really say, well, I really don't care what you guys have come up collectively. This is what I want to do as an individual. And so for us, it's more of a dialogue point. And so if somebody does come up to the open mic or come up on the hip hop night, I mean, I could give you an example. Just last week we had a group, and they didn't really get it, genuinely. You know, they didn't really understand what we meant by it. And they did a song that we felt didn't kind of fit into the fabric of the space. But we allowed them to perform. And afterwards, it was like, you know, I talked to the person that we had invited, and we had a little discussion about it. And, you know, and some people may never really get, let's say, even a song about, I mean, we had a song. A lot of times we get songs that young men do about women, right? And they want to do it as this, like, oh, it's like this sexual love song. But there's also a lot of problems that are into that, because it can also become very misogynistic. And so sometimes young men, they just won't get it. And it's a dialogue. And so hopefully the next time they come, maybe you have the same discussion. Like, we can't really expect to change those people's ideas or change those kind of concepts, because we have young people for maybe on those nights, like 2 or 3 hours. The world has them, you know, for their whole life. And so for us, it's really to engage them. And maybe next time when they come back, they have a better idea. Or when we see them during the week, they have a better idea. Really, most of the dialogue that happens for us are with the young people and with each other during the week, during the after school program, during when we're open to do, you know, an art piece or to do some community organizing. That's where a lot of the dialogue comes in. And a lot of times it's not really set, in a sense, what we mean by sexism. There's some basic kind of foundations, but there's also these other spaces that are gray and that need to have conversation. One of the challenges that we have right now is that we have a whole group of young people that identify as gay, lesbian, or transgender. Or, and what happens is that, you know, that young those young people actually are in our leadership. About half of our collective identifies as gay, lesbian, or transgender. They actually identify, and sometimes they add Q for questioning. And that grouping is really interesting because they're in our leadership. And they also have their own spaces, like they have their own groups to kind of identify, and they have their own discussions about human sexuality. And it's interesting to see that we're able to kind of have that dialogue between allies. There was a meeting that just took place on Saturday between that grouping of young people. The organization is called Juventud, which focuses on gay and lesbian youth. And they had a partnership with some of the allies, some of the people that would identify as straight. And there's a real discussion that's taking place about homophobia and about sexism and about patriarchy. And it doesn't mean that those things don't exist in our center, in our space. What it means is that there's a discussion happening, and we may never, ever get to a point where things are completely equal, but we strive to get to that point and we work towards that point. And I think it helps in our center because you have people that we do want to make it a safe space. Like, one of the things is, you know, I don't ever want to fall into a trap and say, like, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't use words that are derogatory towards people that are gay because, you know, my friend is gay or because this person's gay. It should really be kind of thought out in the sense of why those things hurt people and why those things are, how those things are related to power, and how you can say those things hurtful and really not have to deal with it if you're not gay or lesbian. And so for us, it's really interesting what plays out with our group and how we're able to deal on multiple levels with different issues. So I just think that kind of discussion is really what's needed, more so than us on a night trying to think that we can change or even influence or inspire really young people or other people that come in, because it's not always young people. A lot of times it's, you know, adults that come in to perform as well in those kind of dialogues. And I think we've been positive in the sense that people know that in the Bate, that's kind of what we're going for. And so artists that come in and participate, for the most part, are very respectful. We've never really ever had a real problem with any of the artists understanding what we mean by sexist, racist, homophobic acts or language. And most of them, I think, actually are kind of happy with a space like that, because I think they feel safe in that environment and understand why we're trying to do that and why we would inspire to do that.
Yeah. It strikes me that, you know, that you in spending time with young people and talking about these things, you know, you have the opportunity. There are a lot of opportunities for what some people would call teachable moments.
Right.
And yet at the same time, I'm sure that you don't want to make it. You probably feel careful, like you don't want to make it like school, like that you maybe have to be careful about how it is that you do that, particularly so that you don't, you know, you don't want somebody thinking that you're preaching to them or that you're laying some kind of very heavy kind of agenda on them, even though you maybe think yourself, here's a real good opportunity to talk about values and to talk about what's important to me and to at least have this person who is younger, maybe more impressionable, maybe asking a lot of questions, maybe not real sure. It would be a good thing for them to at least hear me say, no, look, this is what's important to me, and this is why. Is that a difficult line to walk?
Well, you know what's interesting is that one of the things that I find is that our space actually definitely is a political space. It's a space that has a different view of the world or the sense, and maybe there's a lot of people that feel the same way we do, but at least in kind of the mainstream idea of the ideals on the fabric of this country, our center really does challenge a lot of the ideas of individualism and those sort of values. And I'm sure that what happens is that our space is a parallel institution in our community. And so we fill a void that our community really needs. And that's an outlet for young people to express themselves. You know, in our neighborhood, there's a lot of gang violence. There's all those things that are you would traditionally find in an inner city. But there's also this kind of space of hope. And I talk about the politics of possibilities and the idea of being able to change our world. And what happens is that we get a lot of young people, and I meet their parents, And their parents are like, you know, I don't really agree with what you guys really believe in and stuff. But you know what? You guys are doing a lot of good work. And I've seen some good things from my daughter. And, you know, I like her coming here. And so I'm going to keep sending her here. And it's interesting because we have real relationships with parents. We have real relationships with community. A lot of, like, the majority of our members actually grew up fully within a 4-block radius of our center. And that they have long historical ties to that neighborhood, and they know everybody in the neighborhood, and we all live in our neighborhood. It's not like one of these organizations where people drive in to do their job. I mean, we're all from that community. So we're constantly every single day in that neighborhood talking to people. And so what happens is that kind of these teachable moments for us are like when students ask me a question, I'm going to be completely honest with how I feel about that particular topic. But at the same time, we also have this very, very fine, this very, very kind of ideal of you should research it for yourself. What I'm saying to you, and we always, always kind of back that up with our discussions, is that anything that we say to you, you shouldn't take as fact. You should actually take that as some information you should look up. You may disagree with it, you may agree with it, but you should always be a critical thinker and look it up for yourself. The idea that people can be brainwashed. What are you saying about people normally when they can be brainwashed? And a lot of times you're saying that basically their minds are so weak that they can't think for themselves. But young people think for themselves constantly. And now maybe they're more impressionable, let's say, than somebody who is an adult and has kind of a more hard line on their ideals. But what happens is that for us, we really engage in critical thinking. And so some students actually don't really maybe want to talk about the stuff that we want to talk about. But the majority of them are looking for that outlet and trying to understand. And so the teachable moment for us comes when we actually tell them, this is what I feel and what I know from where I'm standing because I've had this experience. You have to go through kind of your own process of finding out what you're really willing to do. And some of our students come around once a week and don't really want to be engaged in the space and like to come because they like to use the internet and, you know, really, I don't really want to talk about that stuff. And maybe we'll have an impact on them in 5 years, or maybe we have a positive impact on them. And other students come every day and want to be there every day and, you know, want to know more and want to learn history and ask for books and ask for information. And I think that that's really for us is that we've always had this undertone and always have been very good at saying, you have to come up with this stuff really on your own. We can present you with ideas. We can present you with things that we believe and present you with information. But at the end of the day, I would hate for a young person to take what I say as fact just because I say it. And that would be, to me, be doing a disservice to that young person. But also would be me not being really a good teacher, in a sense. A good teacher should really look at young people in a sense that you allow them to reach their full potential. And it would be stifling if all they did was repeat what I believed in. And it would be horrible if all they did was repeat the same stuff that I say. And so we really encourage critical thinking as opposed to really banking them, basically, really just putting information in their head. It's really for them to be critical.
Yeah. Michael Reyes is our guest. He's a poet and a youth organizer from Chicago. And a lot of what we've been talking about here are things that happen at Bate Urbano. It's a Puerto Rican Latino space for young people that he helped to start in Chicago. He's also been a poet in residence with the Chicago Poetry Center, and that was a program that placed him throughout the Chicago Public School District as a poetry teacher. He's also performed throughout the country as a featured reader, and he's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois, sponsored by the Intersections Living Learning Committee. And we'll be here for about another 10 minutes talking with him. When you, you know, that probably there are some number of people, adults, teenagers, young people who use poetry as a way of trying to talk about what's going on inside them. Mm-hmm. And it can be a very powerful, personal, you know, medium of expression. And then sometimes can rise above just the personal and can speak to a much, much bigger group. I wonder, as you, particularly if you have somebody who you think has real talent and potential as a poet, what kind of critique you do, and how you talk with someone about, you know, what is the difference between something that they may feel is really powerful, but is kind of limited in a sense because it's just maybe about them. And how you go from that to something that is much bigger and that is not just about maybe that person's experience, but speaks to a lot of people's experience.
Yeah, it's like this discussion about the me poet and the we poet. Like, I tend to be a we poet because it's really hard for me to write about kind of my own kind of feelings. I write about feelings, but then I end up writing about, like, we and kind of our experiences. So that's an interesting kind of thing, the we and the me. But what happens, I think, is that the way that you can really deal with that and the way that we deal with that is that I believe that in this process, some people aren't really going to want to write about kind of these larger ideas that affect all of us. But I think that in our work and the things that we've been able to do, you have a group of artists that are kind of working on some of the same ideas. And so in that group, what tends to happen is people that want to write about those things tend to gravitate towards that grouping of people. And so a lot of our poets, and I mean, we have even teachers and even directors, like you're talking about 13, 14, 15 people that all write poetry and share and express. And a few of them consider themselves poets. The other ones just, you know, even though they have quality poetry that really would be able to have them be poets, they're more so, no, you know, I'm going to teach and I'm going to work here. What happens, though, is that, you know, you keep inspiring people and keep working towards the goals that you have set. So in our group, we would take that instance and you would use that in a sense for people because you would see that experience. Maybe somebody can relate to that personal experience. Now, I would hate to take from somebody kind of their way of writing, their style of writing, their experiences and belittle it to the point that, oh, you know, that really doesn't relate to what we're talking about. Most of the time, things that people are dealing with are things that most people are dealing with. And so those type of poems are important and there's a space for them because I'm not saying that every poet has to do the type of poetry we do. There's a space for all of those different types of poetry. And so I would, you know, if I came into that kind of thing, I would encourage that young person to keep writing about those experiences. And maybe at some point those experiences relate to other people and how do they relate to other people. And maybe at some point that artist would be able to write maybe in from a perspective of we, but it's okay, I think, to write from a perspective of me at times, because sometimes those feelings need to be out. It's easier and better for a young person to write those feelings on a notebook than to lash out at somebody. It's easier and probably more productive for that young person to write those things about what they're going through on a sheet of paper than to really act out violently, in a sense. And sometimes it's that easy or that simple, that this kind of volatile kind of feelings, it's easier to get out on paper. So I think that, you know, I would never want to discourage someone from writing about their experience, because we all have different experiences and we're all coming from different places. And that's what makes us human, those differences. And it's so important for people to be able to express those differences and those feelings. Mm.
Do you spend time talking about technical issues? I mean, in a sense, that, you know, the mechanics of language and how people put words together and how maybe doing something differently might make it more effective and not, you know, not just talk about content issues, but also talk about style.
You know what? I really don't, to be honest with you. And the reason I don't is that I believe, first off, that each one of us are really poetic. Each one of us are writers. Each one of us are creators. And we're all creative beings as human beings. And what happens is that often at some point in our life, we're taught and told that we can't dance and that we can't paint and that we can't write. And it's very damaging. And I can remember even, I'm sure, in our own experiences, whether it was, you know, first grade or second grade, and somebody tell you, oh, that doesn't look good. You can't draw. And then you know, you kind of like start believing those sort of things, and you have this standard of what art is and the standard of what poetry is and this standard. And so for me, that's not really important. For me, finding your voice is important. For me, finding what really moves you and what inspires you is important, and what angers you is important, more so than the technical aspect. I also believe that every one of us kind of have our own rhythm in the way that we want to write, in the way that we want to present, in the way that we want to create. And so while some poets will say, well, let's do this kind of technical stuff, to be honest with you, I really don't know many of the kind of formulas for poetry and the structures and It doesn't matter to me, in a sense, because for me, it's more important to find the voice that we're looking for. And if you want to develop that way, there's plenty of spaces that you could learn to do that. But like really the workshops that I facilitate and have for the last 10 years and working with young people and working with other students is really for them to find the voice first, because the other stuff you'll learn. Sometimes you may even learn the structure first and you still don't have your voice. But it's really important to kind of find the space that you need to be heard, and what are the things that you want to be heard, and what are the things do you want to put out, because that's the first step. And we're all really, really poetic in a sense. Once we speak and we can speak language and we can put these things down and write and talk and recall stories even, right? I always use the example of recalling stories. One of the things that I tell my students is, have you ever seen something happen to someone and then you take that story and you go tell someone? And they're like, yeah. I said, well, that's basically being a storyteller. And it's important that we all are able to tell our stories, whether it's our histories as a people, or as stories as our families or ourselves or our individuality, which is different than individualism, right? I'm talking about individuality, those things that make us very beautiful as human beings. Individualism, you know, more concerned about yourself. Individuality is very beautiful, and we should always, always celebrate human individuality.
We had a couple of minutes left. You were talking earlier about maybe that the youngest person who was involved in Vaté was 11?
11, yeah.
And you're 27.
Seven.
When you look at that 11-year-old, and I don't know if this is a boy or a girl.
It's a young man.
Yeah, that 11-year-old guy. And you think about his life, and you think about what your life is now, but more importantly, like what life your life was like when you were 11. Do you think that the world in which he is growing up is substantially different from the one that you grew up in when you were 11? Is it tougher for – do you think it's tougher for him to be an 11-year-old boy today than it was when you were 11?
Well, I know we didn't have no iPods when I was 11 and those sort of things. This is an interesting thing, or like really use of computers so quickly. They can get on a computer so fast. I think that, you know, there's some beautiful possibilities today. And I think that for that young person that is 11, it's interesting, right? Because I know that those young people, they look up to you in a sense, right? And you're somewhat of a role model, and you can see it in that, you know, the first thing they want to do is greet you. And it's really interesting. And I thought I was going to have a problem. Once they're called the Shorty Crew. That's what I named them. They're young. They're like 11, 12, 13, 14. And they just like really started coming around this summer. And before that, our youngest person was like 14 or 15, but they found the space through their cousin and they started coming. And so it's interesting to see. And I thought I was like, oh, man, these kids are 11. Now it's really time for me to get out of this part of it because I'm not going to be able to connect with them in any way. And I'm going to, you know, but there's still some level, I think, of understanding that we can share some certain things. You know, like I grew up in a space that, you know, gang violence was real. Alcoholism and drugs was real. Those type of things were real issues. And I think even questions of human sexuality was real. And I think those students still go through that. I think that we can't really gauge necessarily if their generation has it worse than, let's say, my generation. But what we can do is, I think, find those commonalities and those problems that still exist. I mean, racism is still a problem, and they're going to face that in their life. They're going to face that at some point. They're going to have to, you know, confront that, if not already. I mean, really, even kind of the existence of ghettos is a result of that, you know, and really gentrification that they're experiencing. You know, their experience is one that their generation could really come back to that neighborhood and it'd be gone if we're not reacting to it and also being able to actively engage our community in resisting it. So in some ways we can share a lot of things, but they're also, I'm sure, instances and things that their generation face that I may not fully understand and even be able to speak on because I'm not from that generation. But there's a lot of spaces in between that we have kind of this common experience. And I think that's what culturally we share things and also just kind of the same type of problems that have existed. Not that they repeat themselves, but that those kind of historical problems insist to be resolved. And if we don't take care of those problems, they'll keep surfacing and surfacing and surfacing and surfacing to a point that we eventually will have to deal with them. And that's one of those things, you know, that they're going to face that we're going to have to try to figure out how to resolve some of these issues that we have in our communities.
We're going to have to stop because we're here at the end of the time for this hour of Focus 580. I want to mention again that our guest, Michael Reiss, is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois, sponsored by the Intersections Living Learning Community. And if you're interested in meeting him and hearing from him, he'll be giving a performance tonight at PAR 730. So you should feel welcome to attend. Also, a lunchtime event at La Casa. That's tomorrow at noon. Michael's from Chicago. He's both poet and youth organizer, co-founder of the Bate Urbano, this youth space for Puerto Rican Latino young people that we have talked about. He's worked as a youth organizer for now for more than 10 years. He's also been poet in residence with the Chicago Poetry Center. He's performed throughout the country as poet, as featured reader, also been published in a number of places. Thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you.